AC's on, turn up the microphone. She's talking sports, so you're about to learn a ton. At 8:33, she hangs out with Mike and me. And you know from the song that now's the time with Stacey's on.
Stacey.
Yeah.
Quite a game, huh? I'm not talking about the Seahawks game. I'm talking about within the game.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Not looking forward to this.
Yeah, this is going to be an interesting one. That sound you hear, that sound, is an ego deflating. But before we get into that, because I think we all know what's going to happen here, let's just do a quick replay of last week's episode. Who scores first?
I would like to say with all of these predictions, I was especially bold. Just know that.
All right.
Okay.
Especially bold. We'll give you, you know, we'll remember that, but it won't actually go toward your points.
The Cardinals.
So, in the game, I don't recall the game super well, but...
Of course you don't.
So what happened here, Stacey? Who actually... you know,
it was not the Cardinals.
All right. It was not the Cardinals.
It was the other team.
It was the other team. Okay. That's a minus one.
Is it a minus one or is it just a zero? Is it a lack of points?
All right, we'll just go with minus one.
Okay.
Since I am making the rules. We didn't have, so unfortunately, the mystery Cairo person did not respond in time. Game had already started.
No,
so,
what we need to say is the mystery Cairo person gave you his or her answers after the game.
That was a little suspect. That did happen, and they were disqualified as a result.
Rightfully so.
Rightfully so. However, that does not save you entirely because 425 texted in, Seattle scores first. That is 1-0. Texter, one.
You know,
Stacey,
what? I wanted to say
zero.
Whoever gets the ball scores first.
I think you did say that. Maybe something along those lines. But nonetheless, let's move on, shall we? That is 1 for the texter, 0 for Stacey. Question number 2. Who scores last?
The Seahawks. Mike, why do we...
Okay, so what does the...
Why are we even doing this?
Yeah, I'm starting to ask myself that same question. But let's go ahead with it anyway, since we are already rolling. Who scores last? Yeah, that would be the Seahawks for Stacey. I don't recall, but I thought it was something.
No, it was the Cardinals.
And okay, that's would be a big fat zero.
Okay.
Our texter says who scores last? Cardinals score last, so that would be another one for 425. Has 2 points. Stacey has 0 points. But you still have time to make a comeback here. All right, so let's talk about the first turnover. Who gets the first turnover?
The Seahawks. I said that so confidently.
You did say that confidently, and what actually happened?
The Seahawks got a turnover.
That's
I was right,
true.
As usual.
You were right
usual.
On that one. You got one right. And the texter said Seahawks get first turnover as well.
Oh, shocking.
So it is now 3-1.
Come on.
It's getting to the impossible stage. And you also had, I think on the bonus point round for that.
Oh, wow, Mike.
Which the texter didn't actually answer, so you have nothing to worry about there. You said it was going to be a cornerback who had got that.
I said it was going to be a cornerback, yeah. Mike. Because DeAndre Hopkins is their most targeted receiver by far and remained the most targeted receiver in this game with 12 catches, which is 5 more than the next closest person.
If the Seahawks were only as defensive as you. All right. Now, next question. This is always the biggie and always the confusing one because they seem to inspire teams to match their own lack of effort. What do we have here? Which defense gives up more yards?
I don't know why I'm going to say this, but I'm going with the Cardinals against my better judgment. It just feels in my gut like that's going to happen. See, I need to trust my gut more often, Mike, because that's exactly what happened.
That is exactly what happened. That's another point for Stacey. And our texter at 425 said, Arizona gives up more yards.
Come on.
This is a beatdown. Wow. 4-2-2. And we haven't even gotten to the score yet. This texter knows their stuff. And this texter texted literally like a minute after the segment, maybe even during it, according to the timestamp on here.
Well, we're fighting now.
I know. All right. Last one. Final score. And who wins the game?
Seahawks win. I'm going Seahawks 23, Cardinals 21. Here's the thing, Mike. It was technically a field goal difference. The Seahawks had a chance to win on many an occasion in this game. I would say you replay this game 10 times, the Seahawks win 8 of them.
Yeah, so let's just go on to what the texter said. And here's what the texter said. And I got to say, so the texter and you both got it wrong. Seattle did, in fact, lose, not win. Rather, did win, not lose. But the texter said Seattle would win with 34 points.
Are you kidding me?
And Arizona, 27 points. I got to say, that is a pretty convincing round.
Mike.
That was like you in your younger days when we started this competition, when you still had it, as they like to say in sports.
You are the only person I hate more than this texter right now.
And I'm curious, again, because we talked about this in the last... How old are you again?
It doesn't matter, Mike.
So maybe there is some truth. Maybe in your 20s you get this, correct?
Wow.
You hit 30 now, and maybe...
Here's the thing.
It's a chance that you've lost a step. I'm not saying that that's true,
Mike,
but the numbers don't lie.
Michael, both Russell Wilson and I are elite athletes who have reached the pinnacle of our profession and are widely regarded as indispensable pieces of a team. We both had off days, uncharacteristic performances from both of us.
That's all
I'll say about that.
All right. So we have to put both of you then back in the MVP hunt.
Oh, we're leading it still. We're leading it.
All right, so
Stacey, this number from the text line.
I'm texting this person back. I'm going to send him something. I can't actually run an official contest from my own little nighttime show, but I'm going to send him something. I wonder what I'm going to send them.
A picture of me being sad.
Exactly.
Signed, never text me again.
A sad Stacey picture.
First of all, that is the perfect gift
for any listener.
Thank you so much for participating in the game, Texter. You clearly know your stuff. You made it really, really fun, and you beat me. Because of that, Texter, know that I hate you.
Yeah.
You've created a lifelong enemy. I'm just being honest.
I understand that. You're just, again.
You know? I'm a sore loser.
You're not petty. Let's just put it on the record that you are not petty.
I am the least petty person I know.
Right, exactly. And the most modest.
By far.
I dominate with my modesty.
By far. I am more modest than anyone.
All right, so this game. Wow. Yeah. It was
a weird one. Another weird one.
It felt like the Seahawks were committed to not winning it. It felt like early on, like this was going to be a blowout.
Yeah.
And it had all the makings. And then suddenly... they couldn't do anything right.
This defense, I was looking back at the snap totals for the game. So just basically looking at which players played the most. I've been scratching my head all year thinking, this doesn't make any sense. Why is this defense so bad? You have Bobby Wagner. You have Jamal Adams. You have Jaron Reed, who had 10 sacks for you 2 years ago. You're paying $11 million. He's not old. He's still a young player. What's happening here? This doesn't make sense. Looking back over it, I'm like, oh, you got some injuries. Jamal Adams isn't playing. Your plan for what the defense would look like is also missing some guys for the year. Marquise Blair in your secondary was going to be your starting nickel corner. He's gone. Bruce Irvin was going to help you as part of your pass rush rotation. A big reason you didn't go out and get Jadeveon Clowney or spend a lot of money on one guy is because you were going to have several guys.
Right.
One of those guys is gone for the year in Bruce Irvin. Daryl Taylor, who was going to be another part of that rotation. He hasn't even played a down for you because he started the season with a football injury. So he's on the NFI list. You are short guys that you were counting on to be part of a rotation. It was supposed to be the gamble, the safer gamble, because you'd have more pieces, but you ended up losing several of them. So now you have parts of a pass rush that feel very incomplete. And it's not any individual player's fault, because they were never expected to be the guy. Like, no guy on here was going to be Clowney. No guy was going to come in and be a premier edge rusher like Nick Bosa. That's not the role that they were asked to do. They were asked to be part of a rotation, stay healthy, stay active, stay in it, and just, you know, keep getting in there and getting reps. And instead, you've got guys that are being called on to be regular starters in for the majority of the game. It's just not their job.
Right.
So that's not making an excuse. It is to say the Seattle Seahawks have big decisions to make on defense. Do you make a move? to add to the defense. The trade deadline for the NFL is November 3rd. You don't have a lot to bargain with. You gave up 2 first-round picks for Jamal Adams. He's coming back, and I think he will make your defense better.
Without any question.
Without question. So that was a good trade. I still think it's a good trade, and it just leaves you with less to bargain with. So you have to face, do you make a trade? The second question is, do you make any personnel decisions? Is there anyone you bench in favor of someone else? I know people aren't ecstatic with Bobby Wagner or Shaquille Griffin. Neither of those players are going anywhere. Neither player is being benched. However different you feel like they should be playing, they are two of the best players on this defense. Bobby Wagner especially. Like, right. if you think he should be, you're being absolutely insane. There are other guys, though, that people are looking at, like Alton Robinson. Alton Robinson is a guy they drafted in the 5th round this year to be a difference maker. He played 7 snaps on Sunday. Should he be out there more often?
Wouldn't they just put him out there? I mean, it seems like Pete Carroll is not exactly the coach known for keeping somebody on the bench to keep somebody else happy. He's always been like, if you out-compete, you start, regardless of pay scale. I mean, why wouldn't he be playing more then?
It's a good question. And there is a multitude of information that we are not privy to that this team has. I mean, coaching decisions are made with information we don't know.
Right.
It could be that Alton Robinson is a rookie with not a lot of experience, and they have veterans that have more experience. And those veterans were given a chance to show that, and that happened to be this Sunday, right? Like, that could be part of it. Maybe what we see next week is that a guy like Alton Robinson gets more snaps, you know? And guess what? You're going to lose a game. Maybe it's a lesson learned. This defense has to be better. This defense will cost you a Super Bowl if they do not get better.
Yeah.
And this defense knows it. That's not me being too hard on them. Bobby Wagner said it post game. He was very blunt about it. He said, you either do it or you don't.
Right.
Verbatim. You do it or you do it or you don't.
Yeah. I mean, but then and in this particular case, the Cardinals defense also was a big don't, but they came out with a win.
Right.
And so it makes me wonder whether or not you should actually be really blaming, in some ways, the offense here as much as the defense,
totally
particularly
fair.
In a couple of occasions where they could ice the game and absolutely did not, with kind of distressingly, I mean, are the Arizona Cardinals cornerback, I know Patrick Peterson is good, but it felt like we had one guy who was spectacular. He wasn't even really all that open. He was just making unbelievable catches in Tyler Lockett. But it felt like we got really conservative at places where it seemed odd, given the success of being a little more aggressive this year.
Yeah, and this team has been more aggressive this year, you're right, and there were a couple conservative decisions they make. I know there are people that think toward the end of a game with a chance to ice it, you know, why punt it away and give them a chance? Why not just go for it on fourth down? And it's a tough decision to make. The answer is because it's you risk a lot by doing that,
and the defense hasn't shown an ability to hold anyone.
Exactly.
And
so try to pin them deep. It gives your defense a better chance. You don't have Chris Carson out there. You don't have Travis Homer out there. You have Carlos Hyde, and you have your rookie pick DJ Dallas at running back. There are other people that would have said, like, why run it at all?
Right.
Have Russell Wilson pass it. It's been working out. All of these are decisions. I'm sure they have Tell the Truth Monday for the Seahawks. Every Monday they go over the tape and you look at some hard truths. I'm sure there are some the coaching staff is looking at also. Why didn't I play this guy instead of that guy? Why didn't I call this play instead of that play? In the moment, you think you're making the right decision for the personnel you have, for the look you're getting. And sometimes you're wrong. And that's all it was in some of those moments is you're wrong. And that happens.
So I felt like in watching the game that that the turning point in the game, I felt like where it became pretty clear the Seahawks were going to win was the DK Metcalf play, which is still my favorite play of the year, actually. Running
when
down.
When he ran down Buda Baker, phenomenal play.
Really is an astounding effort. And not only that, just how does someone that big run that fast?
I have no idea.
I don't think anyone has an idea because it was he came from behind him quite a distance on a guy with legitimate speed.
Yes.
And closed him down.
Yeah.
It was
a guy who had a head start, actually. DK Metcalf was closer to midfield on the goal line during that play.
Not only did he have a head start, he actually knew what he was doing. I mean, like DK Metcalf had to see him, recognize what happened,
yes,
and then respond,
yep,
and then ran past everyone.
Yeah.
To get there. And I felt like, and then they didn't score.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, like, that's the type of thing that is going to completely deflate a team. And yet, It didn't. They almost played better after that.
And they had a touchdown after that. Right. They drove, I think, 94 or 97 yards down the field. You're absolutely right. I mean, there were moments where you thought, this is the team that wins a Super Bowl.
Right.
This is what you need. You need a guy, a wide receiver, that can do something that you've never seen before. Right. That's what gets you there. You need a defense facing the second best red zone offense in the league, an offense that has scored up until today either a field goal or touchdown every single time it has been inside the 20-yard line. They held them.
Right.
I mean, as whatever you'll say about the play, it was not good. They did not get a lot of pressure. They held them that right. deep. And then your offense came back and drove all the way down the field to score. That moment was perfect.
Right.
A perfect moment.
It felt like it was, all right, this one's not in the bag, but close. And then it just like, it's like the something happened. It's like this malaise set over the Seahawks yeah. offense, and the defense was never good enough. But remember, I mean, everyone, I think you can't really even talk about offenses and defenses all that separately, because how good an offense is dictates how their defense is going to be able to play and vice versa. I mean, they're all part of the same ecosystem. And so once the Seahawks offense started sputtering a bit, mm-hmm. the defensive holes were pretty apparent, especially when the other team started to get aggressive.
Yeah.
And then suddenly, and they're blitzing, what, every down?
Well, and I was wondering the same thing. I really like that you said that, being part of the same system, because you wonder, like, I'm not in Russell Wilson's head, clearly, in that final interception he had to Isaiah Simmons, but you wonder, like, in this moment, does he think, I know this could be a bad decision. I understand why this would be a bad throw. I have to force it because this is our only chance.
Right.
This is what we need to do. I don't know that that's what he was thinking. Maybe he saw something and thought, okay, if I do this at the right time, maybe there was a miscommunication. Who knows what happened there? I don't. But I wonder if in those moments, when you have a great defense, a stout defense, maybe you try to go for the fourth down instead of trying to make something happen on third
yeah.
or whatever situational football that was in at the time. I can't remember if it was third.
Or you have a great offense and you still go for it on four. I mean, one
right.
of the two.
Exactly.
But or you have Chris Carson in and maybe you get that first down. I mean, there's
and
all
maybe
kinds
you
of
never end up going to overtime
exactly.
because you never give them. Yeah,
exactly.
I think that maybe that's, if you're looking for silver linings from it, I think that is one thing to take. Chris Carson could miss a week, two, 3 weeks, who knows? But he's not right now. It doesn't sound like done for the season. Jamal Adams is coming back. I mean, you think even with those two guys, they could have won. And the Arizona Cardinals are a good team. They are a good team. They are now second place in the NFC West.
In terms of days, what is the over and under on, let's just say Chris Carson is out 3 weeks,
mm-hmm.
on people starting to talk about Marshawn Lynch?
Today. We were getting texts about it today. Yeah, 1,000%. We actually were doing a joke. Our last segment we call Sum It Up, which is when we kind of look at like everything we talked about today. What's the big right. thing we're taking from it? And the question I had was, are we overreacting? There was a lot of bad in this game. But Tyler Lockett had 200 yards. Russell Wilson had three touchdowns and almost
200
yards
on the dot, right?
Yeah, 200 on the dot. And he almost had a fourth touchdown there, and it would have been like 220 or something
right.
like that. You had lots of good moments. Your interception still had two takeaways. You threw two picks as a quarterback, and you got out of scoring. The opposing offense scoring on those because of your defense. And also I'll throw in DK Metcalf too. Okay, I'll count him there.
Right.
Are we overreacting? And so we're joking about that. And I think yeah, but we had some people making good points saying, hey, I feel like I'm reacting normally. You were waiting for the other shoe to drop. And anyways, I say this because we had people purposely overreacting after that. Someone saying, like, sign Marshawn Lynch now. Someone else saying, like, cut Russell Wilson. What's going on here? And then we also were doing the put him in for any defensive player. We're just now like, the defense needs help. I don't care who it is. Michael Strahan decides that in his 40s, he wants to remember what it's like to play football. Put him in.
We'll take him for a game. We don't care. We'll put him on the edge.
Put him in.
Get some quarterback pressure, or at least some quarterback
yeah.
amusement.
Yeah.
You know, if we can't get pressure. All right, Stacey. So it was, I guess, holistically, first Seahawks defeat. Kind of first Stacey really
Look,
bad one.
I know exactly how the Seahawks players feel this morning.
And do you also know how to fix your problems the way they are going to be discussing? It's Tell the Truth Monday, is it not?
I believe that
Tell the Truth Monday on this show as well. What are you going to do to right your ship before the next game?
I'm just
going
to study up. I'm just going to execute better next time. You know, going to take chances.
On both sides of the ball.
On both sides of the ball. Take chances when I need to, but then recognize, you know, when smart play is. When's the smart play?
Right. And I That's
think
what I was hoping for.
Both me and the Seahawks are going to do that this week.
All right. All right. Thank you, Stacey.
Thanks.
You can ring my bell, Rachel Bell. You can ring my bell, Rachel Bell.
So, Rachel, on the hierarchy of things that are important to you in your life, after, say,
pizza.
You know, what ranks number two?
I had an ex-boyfriend jokingly, but not jokingly, once criticize me and say, my top priorities are my cat and then the Facebook group Buy Nothing and then my relationship. And I was like, that's not true, but it might be.
It might be true.
It might be true. Well, when I'm in a relationship, that is pretty high up on the priorities. But there's this story in The Atlantic titled, What If Friendship, Not Marriage, Was at the Center of Life? Our boyfriends, our significant others, and our husbands are supposed to be number one. Our worlds are backwards. So it starts out talking about this pair of friends. They're 31 years old. They met when they were 18. They were in boot camp together in the Army. And later in life, they reconnected. One of them had a divorce. The other one became a single mom. And so they teamed up and basically became life partners without the romance and without the sex. The one without the child would go pick up the kid from school, babysit the kid when she needed help. They just really helped each other out. But they struggled to find a name for this, and other people just didn't understand it. They always thought they were a couple, or they thought they were sisters.
Right.
And so they were always trying to explain, like, no, we're just life partners without the sex and the romance. And so this story gets into a lot of interesting things. So they do give a lot of examples of people who are living their lives this way. People who, you know, might even have like a joint bank account, who live together, but they're just in a friendship partnership.
Right.
But the interesting thing about this article is kind of the history of friendships and marriage in American culture. So in this Atlantic article, it says between the 18th and the early 20th centuries, women were really close friends like this, and they had a word for it. It was romantic friendships. They would even like sleep in the same bed together, and they would hold hands, and they would call each other my love, my queen, and they were just best friends. And that was okay, because men weren't threatened by these relationships, because women weren't educated and they didn't work. So the men knew, they still need us. We're going to live with them, and we're going to buy them everything they need. But once that changed, once women became more independent, these kind of romantic friendships were shunned because they lost their innocence and people assumed they were sexual.
Right.
So cut to the timeline of marriage. This was laid out by the Northwestern University. They said, in America, from the colonial period until about 1850, marriage was all about economics and survival, just supporting each other, nothing to do with love. And then from about 1850 to 1965, love became a priority. And then 1965 to now, they call it a self-expressive marriage, which is you expect your partner to basically be your everything. They're supposed to be there for emotional support. They're supposed to be your best friend. You're supposed to have shared hobbies, intellectual stimulation, co-parenting, sexual satisfaction. And you hear this a lot, people saying you can't find everything in one person, but most of us really, really try to find all of that. And so, you know, the question is it okay then to put a best friend first, who gives you things that your partner does not give you? Is that okay? And another journalist lays out the fact that people usually say, well, the difference between friends in a relationship are sex. She says, well, not all couples are having sex.
Right.
So how does that factor into the relationship? So it's a really fascinating topic.
It is an interesting topic. I'm not sure, though, that I necessarily buy into the idea of it being sort of a fixed hierarchy, right? I mean, you have a person in your life that at that moment in time, or maybe at that hour of the day is everything that you need to pay attention to at that time. But even in a, when you're in a romantic relationship that's healthy, you still have friends that sometimes will out-prioritize, you know, that romantic relationship. That's a healthy thing. Like, you should be able to have, maintain, like, multiple important things that can rise to the level of one. It seems like that's kind of a healthy life. Now, too many of those, I guess, you know, makes you a little schizophrenic, right?
Yeah, and I think that maybe they mean, like, I don't know, if your best friend and your partner both had a flat tire at the same time, who would you save? Like, I kind of took it to mean more of, like, who are you going to take care of? Because, yeah, of course, you're going to, like, tell your partner that you're not going to hang out because you're going to go see your friends. I think that, you know, this all has to do, I mean, you heard that rundown of how marriages have changed in friendships.
Right.
It's all just about culture and what people accept and what they don't accept. I hope that there are people in our culture who feel comfortable, if they haven't found a partner, you know, doing what those two women did and being roommates and helping each other out, because it is hard to be on your own in society. Like, we're not supposed to be on our own. You're supposed to put your resources together. That's how you get more food, a bigger house, you know, and somebody's there to, like, save you. And, you know, they kind of laid it out in this article as if society doesn't understand these kind of friendships. And I think that whatever works for you, I hope you feel comfortable doing.
I think society does understand those friendships, because I think there are people who are reading that who are in one, right?
Yeah.
I would also say that I think society does understand a lot of things without needing to put a title on it, right?
Yeah.
I mean, I think that is what they're referring to as part of a partnership is the way many marriages end up, right? I mean, if you are if you've been married 35 years, not every marriage ends up, but it can end up in as a really good partnership. In fact, I've got three different sets of friends. Immediately, I can tell you that their parents ended up there, right? They went there and they have this sort of platonic arrangement, right? So I guess it does. I mean, the fact is that maybe what it's really saying is that you shouldn't have to hide that fact. Like, that should be a natural evolution of things. And I think that's true.
Maybe it depends where you live. I mean, the part that really stood out to me also was how they said, you know, in the 18th to 20th centuries, women would call each other my love, my queen. If you were on my Instagram, that's what women call each other again. This is so common.
Oh, really?
I mean, oh, yeah. Everything is like my queen, like my babe. Like, it's so common again. And I think that, like, female friendships have really come back. So maybe they never went away, but
maybe it's just 1800s lexicon has come back.
Yeah, maybe that's what it is. Or maybe it's like fashion, you know, every 20 years it repeats. But, like, I think that in our society, friendship is pretty high at the top of the hierarchy, and people really respect those relationships.
Well, I think that, and I think we kind of have an intuitive sense of this as well, because at least from what I understand, my friends who are in the dating world, you know, when I've got a girlfriend, and so I don't download a lot of dating apps, oddly enough, into my phone.
Just a few
here and there. But I'm always looking over my friends' shoulders if they're, like, scrolling through stuff, because I find it kind of interesting to look over the shoulders. And I would say that one of the things you do, I'm guessing, is you do have at least a couple of photos, if not several, of you and your friends to show that you've got people beyond yourself, right? I mean, I think that that's a validation point. And so I think that healthy relationships do have partners who have friends that they also prioritize, right? Wouldn't that make sense?
Totally. That's funny you say that, though, because I never liked when I was on dating apps when people put pictures with their friends, because sometimes everyone looks so similar I couldn't tell which was which, and I'm like, which
not,
one
not exclusively
is he?
You have
which
to have the title photo has to be
yes,
you right
and
not
you.
Not just this random
I love
people.
When the title photo, you see this so much with men, is you can tell that it was a picture with their ex-girlfriend and they cut her out, because you can still see the arm and sometimes you can see her hair or like her cheekbone, and you're like, did you not have one photo by yourself?
But you also know that person is no longer a priority.
And they were capable of having a relationship at one point.
Yeah. Well, I guess that's it. I actually love stories like this, because I think that for me, I mean, you and I've talked about this a fair bit. I think the whole weirdness of adult friendship and when friendships are both sliding. I mean, they don't necessarily slide, you know, toward a romantic friendship. And sometimes they can slide toward a romantic and then back into a friend, which is another weird status. But the whole idea of this evolution of what we expect. And I do think, though, the point I really like in that is that maybe we do front load way too much expectation. We load up our marriages maybe aren't set for the tensile strength that we think they are, and that there's a lot of that weight that can be offloaded on friends and other things like that that don't need to be loaded up specifically on a marriage.
Yeah. When I first read the headline of the story, I kind of took it to mean that, you know, should, if you've been single for a long time and you have good friends, should you just give up on a romantic relationship and just say, hey, let's be partnerships with our friends? But I just don't know how many people would be willing to totally give up in that way and say, okay, I'm devoting myself to you, my friend. I think a lot of people, they were also pointing out, like, it's become much more common to be, what is it called when you're asexual?
Yeah.
And that's become, you know, as a part of the LGBTQ alphabet, that's one of the things now. And so, yeah, if you do take sex away, if all you want is a partnership, it's just kind of like whatever you want, just do it.
Well, I don't know. I guess that makes some sense to me. I'm a kind of live and let live kind of guy, so I guess that makes some sense. Thank you, Rachel.
Thank you.
Coming up, Stacy Joe on what looks like not only was a bad loss for the Seahawks, it was a bad loss for Stacy Joe as well. And one of our texters ends up a winner right after the break. Welcome back to Cairo Nights. We like to think of this as our little lullaby. The last little bit of what is left in our heads before we head home for the evening, refill it with the same stuff or new stuff, I hope, and then come back tomorrow. Shane, what do you have for us?
I had a very disappointing experience today.
What's that?
I was supposed to get...
Other than work, what's that?
No, actually, the work is my highlight of my life right now, if that will tell you anything. But no, I was supposed to go get my permanent crown put in today.
Oh, no.
Show up. Go into the office and I'm sitting there and they're like, okay, we're going to take some molds of it again. And I'm like, well, don't you already have the mold of it? And they go, oh no, did nobody call you? And I'm like, no. They're like, oh yeah, no, we took the wrong measurements of your tooth. So you got to wait another week and a half to go get your permanent crown on. And I was, I kept my cool, but I was really close to being really rude and really going off on these people.
Right.
As it's like, you couldn't have called me. It's a simple phone call, and now I got to deal with this for another week, and it's been irritating. I can already feel it getting a little loose. I'm ready to get this whole tooth debauchery over with.
Hey, I had the same thing happen to me, and they delayed on replacement for the same kind of rough reasons. You can buy fairly... It's not so significant that it's going to create any more problems, but you can buy dental grade glue in like Bartels. And so if that cap works itself loose before they see you again, you can buy that stuff and get it put, and they can still remove it very easily, but it will keep it in place.
I'm going to do that because I'm not giving them another dollar.
Yeah. Yeah. You might want to do
that. Why would you?
Yeah. Why would you?
Yeah.
Frank, what do you got?
You know, I am captured by a novel. It's been a while. I plowed through London and Rebecca over the summers. Oh. And so I was looking for something to read, and literally last night picked up A Time for Mercy, the latest John Grisham novel.
Mm-hmm.
I've read everything that he's written.
Right.
I know it's not, maybe it's not great prose. I love his writing. I love his stories. I love these characters. It's great. I'm already almost halfway through it.
Wow.
They
tend to breeze along pretty quickly.
They do. I mean, I've always wondered, okay, is this just really, you know, low rent writing that is easy to read, or is this just good writing and he tells a good story?
You know, I'm mixed on Grisham.
Yeah.
I don't tend to enjoy his books because I think everything kind of moves through too quickly and too much of a pat fashion. But there is his organization of his books, the way he tells a story, it moves it along, and there is absolutely something to be said for that. You know, people who understand how to construct a narrative, you know, and I give him a world of credit for that.
And then I got to add, good, clear, straightforward prose.
Absolutely.
I admire that.
Absolutely. You don't have to sit there and, like, you know, rub your elbow pads, you know, while you're thinking about it. What I was thinking about is I'm kind of glad we got that little cold snap to remind us of what we're facing this winter, and I'm kind of glad it's gone. I got to say, this is the first time I was out on my bicycle trying to do a long ride yesterday. I did do a long ride, it stayed cold. Normally, yeah. you know, I tend to generate a fair bit of body heat, and, you know, a mile or two in, I'm feeling pretty good. I was staying cold. My feet got numb. Like,
It was chilly.
It kind of caught me a little off guard. One of those days where you're feeling every year, you know? So I'm glad I went out there and did it. But I'm also feeling like this is going to be a tough winter to keep the outdoors activities going. I have a sense that it's not going to be an easy one. And I'm going to start doing, for the first time in my life, dreaming about California during the winter in Seattle, because normally I love the winter up here. And I think I will again. I just had one bad day. From all of us here, thank you for joining us. Remember, we got the radio play coming up on Thursday, so please do listen in on that. Frank is a star in this play.
No.
Absolutely he is. If for no other reason, listen so you can embarrass him later. That's all from us, and we'll talk to you tomorrow. Take a look all around.